You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. I recently spent a day with extended family, and going into that event, there were some concerns. Would that aunt bring up religion or that cousin dive into politics? Like many Americans, my family is diverse in their views and beliefs, and it's not just our families. It's our workplaces and communities. Our country is increasingly diverse and increasingly divided, and that can make for some tense encounters, even conflicts. Many of us shy away from such difficult conversations and opt instead to just avoid points of disagreement. But my next guest says that discussing tough issues with people who disagree can be important and productive. Peter Coleman is a professor of psychology and education at Columbia University. He founded the Difficult Conversations Lab to study what works and what doesn't. He's written multiple books based on their findings, including Making Conflict Work and The Handbook of Conflict Resolution. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Heather.
Hopefully this won't be a difficult conversation.
Well, you learn a lot from difficult conversations, so if it is, so be it.
Well, there are lots of flavors of difficult conversations, Peter. When you founded the Difficult Conversations Lab in the early 2000s, what kinds of problems or issues were you actually hoping to address with that research?
Well, we set up the lab in order to collect data on these kinds of conflicts, what I would say sort of a more real-time data, because a lot of research in conflict is more case study of things that happened in the past or survey studies, which tend to be remove people from the sort of experience of the conflict. And we wanted to try to really have real people in a room that differ on a you know, potentially polarizing moral issue and have conversations about them, and then sort of study specifically what helps them have conversations that they're willing to continue and that they feel that they learn from, and the kinds of conditions where they get stuck and just walk out or get, you know, infuriated and shut down. So that's what we did, and we have studied a variety of different issues. We've done the research both in the States, and a colleague of mine, Katarina Kugler, has a lab in Munich, so we've run it in different places. But the issues have been pro-life, pro-choice differences, have been about hate speech on college campuses, whether campuses should invite provocative speakers or deny their capacity or ability to speak on campus, climate change, you know, people that believe in climate change versus those that don't believe the science. We basically try to focus in on issues when we're running a study that are currently sufficiently salient and heated that people feel strongly about them, so we can sort of study that type of dynamic.
And how does the Difficult Conversations Lab actually work? How do you find those people? How do they sign up and agree to come in and have one of these difficult conversations?
We usually begin by, we have an opinion survey that we send out, and it can be, you know, a student population, it can be a general population that we, you know, we use Craigslist or use, you know, other types of online forums to get people to basically respond to tell us their attitudes on a variety of issues. And then we look to match people who have differing points of view on a particular issue, and then we invite them into the lab. And we ask them usually, typically, to try to have a conversation and then reach some kind of consensus in their understanding of an issue, and then write a few sentences or a paragraph, a statement about it that will be shared publicly. So we basically give them, even though they're morally opposed on an issue, we give them what we call a superordinate goal, something that, you know, that they are going to try to do together. And, you know, because research would say that usually that helps conflicts go in a more constructive direction. But of course, when it's a moral conflict and people have strong feelings and concerns and a history with those issues, then just asking them to, you know, come to some consensus is insufficient, and many of them get stuck and shut down. So then they have a conversation. We record it in these various ways. And then afterwards, once we end the conversation, one of the key things we do is we separate the participants and we have them sit down and listen again to the conversation that they just engaged in. And then we put them in front of a computer and we have them use what we call a mouse tracking measure, which is basically we say, put the computer mouse on this pad and move it to the left whenever you feel particularly angry or upset or irritated. Move it to the right when you feel more hopeful or more positive. So it's really just sort of tracking kind of negativity and positivity of emotions over time as they, again, sort of re-experience the conversation that they just had. And that's a critical component of our research, because what we're trying to measure are the dynamics of people's emotional experiences. So it's not just saying to people after a half-hour conversation, how did you feel? You know, from 1 to 10, how did you feel? From, you know, terrible to awesome. Because that gives you, you know, kind of a moment in time average understanding, but it really loses all the information of people's emotional experiences in these conversations, which are very dynamic and can change.
Well, Peter Coleman, the Difficult Conversations Lab has been running for almost 2 decades. You've done hundreds of these pairings and conversations. Let's talk about some of the lessons you've learned from looking, you know, at the commonalities between all those different conversations, and start with what I think a lot of us have a gut sense of already, which is what doesn't work? What makes a conversation go off the rails and end?
In my experience in studying conflict for decades now, there are qualitatively different kinds of conflicts. There's a theory that's been around for a long time called contact theory. And contact theory is the idea that if you just bring people together who have a difference of opinion or a conflict over something, most of the time, just having a sense that they're human beings and they're, you know, they're complicated people, and you sort of start to get different information about them and you feel a little bit differently about them, and therefore you can usually talk and work things out. And there's a lot of research that supports that, but under certain conditions, it doesn't work.
And what are those conditions?
When conflicts are deep, emotional, people have strong attitudes, and again, as I said, are sort of identified not being on the other side of this issue. When those things happen, and again, when there's a sort of a complex set of things that are driving us. So Trump, part of it's, you know, his rhetoric, part of it is the media sources that you're paying attention to, part of it is your, you know, sort of history as a progressive or conservative in this country, part of it is religious beliefs. So there are a lot of factors that are actually contributing to the power of that division and the power of the sort of tribal reactions that people have. And under those conditions, simply bringing people together to meet each other can oftentimes backfire. And people tend to leave those conversations feeling more alienated from one another than they had expected to.
So then, what on the flip side of that might you have learned from 2 decades of the Difficult Conversations Lab about whether there are ways to circumvent that, get around that, get through that, and somehow actually build connection and talk about these very deeply held differences? Because, of course, we have a lot of those in our country, in our lives right now, and a lot of people wondering, should we just be avoiding the subject, or is there a way through this?
Again, the most important thing I think to remember is how we engage with people around these differences, if and whether we should, and sort of what the timing of is. You know, if you're full of alcohol at a family dinner, that's probably not the time to raise.
Probably not a good time to raise just about anything.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Right. So, you know, there definitely are issues around timing, but sort of how we engage with the other matters. And this, the simplest thing that we've learned, the most fundamental thing that we've learned in our research, is the importance of complexity, is the importance of a more nuanced understanding of me and my position on these things, of you and your understanding of a particular issue or problem, and of the problems themselves. Because most of these issues that we get stuck on are highly complicated things, and yet we simplify it into, well, that's wrong and this is right. So complexity is the key for us, and so let me give you just a specific example of that.
Yeah, I would say, what does that actually look like in the context of a conversation?
So what most people would do in, you know, what happens oftentimes, for example, in the on news presentation, either reporting or on news programs on television, is you'll have people that will present two sides, right? So some will come out and talk about immigration policy and talk about the horrible things that are happening at the border and how it's this administration's fault. And another group will say, you know, we'll talk about the problems with immigration and the, you know, illegal immigrants and all the damage they're doing. And, you know, so you'll have these sort of two sides to an issue. And the problem with that is that it, what we tend to do when we have these emotional positions on these issues is we really listen to one side and basically completely ignore the other side. We process the information that's consistent with how we feel about it in a much deeper, more specific, nuanced way. And the other stuff we just sort of reject. And so it's something called in psychology called selective perception. If you say to someone, this issue of immigration and immigration laws is a highly complicated set of issues, and we'll present the sort of pro and con, as again is often depicted in the media, and then we bring people in the lab and they pretty much typically escalate and get stuck. And we'll take, in contrast, we'll take a condition where we take the same information, but we present it as a matter of multiple different layers of a problem. And when you frame things like that and then introduce the information, people have a fundamentally different kind of conversation. It's more nuanced in terms of, again, the issue itself, the other people involved and themselves. People are more open to learning and listening to the other side. They ask more questions. They, you know, they grandstand less in terms of their position and advocate, and they, you know, listen and are more open to the other side. You know, in these half-hour conversations, people are not resolving these issues, highly complex moral, emotional issues.
That would be a pretty high bar to set.
Yeah. But what happens is they have the kinds of conversations that they're willing to continue. They would be interested in having further conversations with this individual. They feel like they've learned some things. And what's interesting is it's not just that they learn about the issue itself, but they learn about the other person and the other group and their concerns. And oftentimes they learn about themselves. And that's what this country needs, because we will always have intergroup tensions. We will always have crises and problems that we have to address. And we are in critical need of each other, of each camp, in order to make reasonable policy decisions and basically move us forward to address these kinds of more complex problems.
Peter Coleman is professor of psychology and education at Columbia University. He directs the Morton Deutsch International Study for Cooperation and Conflict Resolution, the Institute for Psychological Science and Practice, and the Advanced Consortium on Cooperation, Conflict, and Complexity. Peter Coleman, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Heather.
Coming up, scientists star in beach reads to get you through the final days of summer. There's more Living Lab Radio after the break.